I feel very strongly that one of the most dangerous words in life is the word free. Mm. It's dangerous. Very
dangerous. Why is it dangerous?
It's dangerous.
This is not true.
Nothing is free.
Yeah.
Nothing.
There's nothing.
Even salvation, yeah, that we say it's free.
So it's technically a lie.
Somebody paid for it. And oftentimes somebody had to pay the ultimate price for what you're getting for free. Yeah. So the reason why it's dangerous is because at no cost. At no cost. Word. Yes. Maybe at no so cost. To you.
From at no cost.
To you.
Yes.
Yes. And the reason why it's dangerous is because it puts you, into that trap to believe because it is free, I can treat it anyhow.
Welcome to this beautiful episode of Leadership Podcast with me, Stephen Agitaya, and today we are here in Texas, right, Greater Houston area, and I have two people from Oyinbo country, but they are black. I don't know what it is. So they're two Telugs. Why? And they are leadership experts. Funny enough, they have this huge conference, transformational leadership colloquium, to, you know, move from one city to the other. So I'm going to start with New Zealand, you know, Dr. Sam.
Thank you, sir.
Ekundai, how are you?
Very good, thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
It's good to have you in Houston.
It's good to see you face to face.
Face to face, yeah. I will be following each other online. And then my next guest is Dr. Nii. Right, who is actually a medical doctor?
Yeah, yeah.
Sydney, Australia.
Yeah, so
you are not white.
Well, it's a great honor to be here. Thank you for being a fantastic host, and thank you for inviting us to this podcast.
Thank you for coming. I really appreciate it. Should we start with the banana? You know, I heard there's this story around the ripe banana that will take us 4 hours. So maybe we should start the entire thing with that.
With it?
Yeah. But I'm curious, the two of you, you don't live in Nigeria, you're Nigerians, and you're doing very well in foreign land, dominated by, I mean, blacks are not that huge in Sydney,
yeah.
Same thing in New Zealand. So maybe I'll start with you. What took you to Sydney?
Well, what took me to Sydney? It's just remarkable. I wanted to leave Nigeria after I traveled to South Africa in 2004, yeah. 2005. I went for an elective. Okay. It was supposed to be in Cape Town.
Medical.
I was in the University of Lagos.
Okay.
So I was in fourth year or fifth year in University of Lagos. I went for this program and I didn't even have enough money to get to Cape Town. So I got stuck in Pretoria. Well, being the first time traveling out, I was like, you know, so I ended up doing this, going to one small clinic run by a Nigerian doctor in Pretoria. But that was the first time I saw traffic lights working and everything. I felt like, you know,
what year was this?
This was 2004-5.
Wow.
So in 2007, I applied to UCL in London, yeah. And I got another clinical placement in clinical neuroscience. I was always interested in the brain.
So you've always wanted to jump.
Well... I went for this exchange program though,
yeah.
And I was lucky enough, you know, with Ajif scholarship and all that, I was able to fund, and then someone gave me some money.
Yeah.
You know, even for South Africa, somebody, I went to a wedding and the chairman of the reception, I just approached him and he paid for my South African trip. Oh. So my parents couldn't afford that. Somehow, anyway, I got to England. First time in my life, I saw an MRI scan with of the brain. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, this kind of technology. And I was just blown away at the National Hospital of Neurology and Neurosurgery in Queen Square. And that was the first time I saw medicine in a different way. And I thought I would go overseas to train. Mm-hmm. So that was my desire. So I kept applying back to UCL. UCL gave me an offer for a Master's of Clinical Neuroscience, but I couldn't afford it. Very poor. Couldn't afford it. And I kept going everywhere. I got admissions for King's College, London, London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. When none of that worked, I was doing my internship at that time. I then applied for USMLE exams, tried to start taking the exams. But this day, on one Sunday evening, I was just watching a documentary on the BBC in someone's house, and I saw a one-hour documentary on the BBC about Australia. that Australia needed doctors. I was like, whoa, this is amazing. So I thought, oh, interesting. I watched a documentary on a Sunday. On Monday morning, I got to work and I saw a poster in front of Lagos University Children's Hospital on the main board. There, one Professor John Hamilton, professor from University of Newcastle in Australia. So like, this is interesting. What a coincidence. And then I got to my ward round in the pediatrics. I was in the pediatrics department. And Professor Okoroma, I'm sure she's still there. She said, hey, Nii, I am bodying a professor from Australia and he wants to meet a couple of interns. Can you get a couple of your colleagues together so that he can sort of interact with you?
Wow.
So I got about four or five of my colleagues. And here I was at lunchtime with Professor John Hamilton from Newcastle. And he spoke about Australia, spoke about different things. And after he spoke about all of that, as we all trooped out, I felt a leading in my heart, and I knew it was the Spirit of God, to go back and say thank you to him, especially. So when everybody left, I went back and I said, sir, thank you for this. It was very enlightening for me because it just gave me clarity. For the first time, I thought Australia, which looked far on the Sunday, looked so near when I saw someone from Australia right in my presence. And he gave me a business card. That business card was what changed my life.
Wow.
2 weeks later, I went to the cyber cafe. You know those days, we had cyber cafe. I went to the cyber cafe.
What year is this?
This was 2007, 8.
Okay.
I think, yeah, getting to 8. But, you know, there was no internet. I had to go to cyber cafe. Yeah, sure. So I sent an email in the cyber cafe to Professor Hamilton, thanking him again and appreciating him. I'm glad I did that because he replied me with a photograph we took together.
Wow.
A group photograph. That group photograph changed my life. Because 12 months later, I finished my internship. I went, traveled to Australia with $500, which I borrowed from two people, and my medical degree. And I flew all the way to Australia to do my Australian Medical Council exams, which I passed. Only for me to realize that indeed Australia wanted doctors, but Australia needed doctors from developed countries, not developing countries.
Wow.
So no one wanted to employ me. Then I remembered Professor Hamilton. And I sent him an email. He didn't remember me, but I had a photograph. At that time, he was in his 70s. He's a much older man now. So I sent him, I was a second from the left. In the photograph, I scanned the photograph in an email and I said, I'm second from the left. Amen. Then he remembered me and he gave me my first job.
Directly. One year.
This was in 2009.
Wow.
So someone called me from the hospital, the clinical superintendent, and said, hey, Professor Hamilton said I should talk to you. I heard you're from overseas. This was an Australian man. Mm-hmm. And I said, yes. And he looked at my CV and he said, he does not think I can cope. I said, well, give me a chance. So he said, okay, I will try. Then he called back and then for 2 hours convinced me to go back because he just didn't feel that it was okay, that I could do it. The next day at 12 midday, I'm giving you the very short version of this. He called me again and he said, hey, Nii, you know what? When I got to work today, the first person I ran into was the only black doctor in our hospital. This was in Newcastle. The only black doctor. He's Sierra Leonean, but he trained in Lagos because those days, in the 60s and 70s,
University of Lagos,
all of the Western African countries, he trained in the University of Lagos. He's a nephrologist. So he said, I approached him and I said, hey, there's a Nigerian doctor, blah, blah, blah. He said, which school? University of Lagos. That's where I trained.
Wow.
Give him a chance.
Wow.
So, you know what? I'm going to give you a chance. And I'm just going to test you for 6 months. Let's see how you go for 6 months. I said, fine. So he said, you're going to have an interview later this week. Mm-hmm. You have a pen? I said, pen? Yeah. He said, yeah. So get a pen on paper. Question one. He told me.
Wow.
He told me the answer. Question two. He told me.
He got the interview.
He told me the answer. And then he said, question three is a clinical question. The doctor should be able to answer the clinical question.
Wow.
But the first two questions were on policy, were on practices. He knew I was just from, for example, the first question was about being, working in a multidisciplinary team. You know, where we train doctors, where the bosses, you know, but then in Australia, you work in a team.
Yeah.
Do you understand? Yeah. So I can't discharge somebody home if the physiotherapist is not happy with their mobility.
Yeah.
Whereas where I was coming from, doctors are kings. So those kind of things. So, you know, yeah. So I got to the interview. It was a phone interview. Question one was the same. I read back the answers. And that was how I got into the Australian system. So 2009, yeah, I got into the Australian system and I was lucky enough, went through the training residency program there, for neurology, which is what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I'm only one of two black neurologists in the whole of Australia and New Zealand.
In the whole of Australia.
Yeah. He is in New Zealand.
And New Zealand.
Yeah, there's no
New Zealand. There's none. Bishop.
Yes, sir. We are still isn't there.
What's
the distance between Sydney
and
3 hours, mate?
Yeah, it was.
So it's like you're in the same continent.
Yeah, pretty much.
So they call it Australasia. So Australasia is a continent that encompasses New Zealand and some of the smaller
and other islands
that, yeah, as a continent.
So New Zealand is one of those.
New Zealand is not one of the small islands, but New Zealand is an island. One of the big
islands. Australia is an island. We're all islands.
Yeah, we're all islands.
Yeah. But, yeah. Anyway, that's how I got there.
You have to speak well about it.
Yeah. Wow, what an interesting story. Yeah. And I suspect you're a good storyteller.
He's amazing. He's amazing.
Maybe your next life.
Stories. I have a course on the neuroscience of storytelling.
It's obvious.
Yes,
it's obvious.
So I teach it.
It's really obvious. Dr. Sam, how about yours?
Thank you. Thank you for asking.
The only person I know from New Zealand. Anyway, you are a person. At least the only black person I know from.
True. Many people have said that because to the glory of God, New Zealand is not usually that kind of a place where many people hear a lot about. And frankly, too, before I got to New Zealand, it was not a place that I had a lot about. We heard about Australia, 2000 Olympics, but not New Zealand. Mm. It happened on one strange day like that. I was studying for my master's and I'd conceived this dream since the age of 14 to be a professor.
Wow.
So since that age, I knew that I was going to study for my PhD.
Wow.
We were living in Singapore then. My dad, my mom and my two sisters, including myself, living in Singapore.
So you grew up in Singapore?
No, we just spent 2.5 years there. Well, I spent 2.5 years there.
Okay.
Dad was a missionary. This was 2006, 2007.
Okay.
So 2007, I was about completing my master's. Yes, we moved from Nigeria in 2006.
To New Zealand.
To New Zealand. To Singapore in 2000. Yeah, that same 2006. And 2007, I was rounding off my master's and we had begun praying to God for where to study for my PhD. As usual, most people would apply to the US, to Canada, to the UK, which was what I did too. I started talking to professors, potential supervisors in those different countries of the world. And the conversations were getting interesting. In fact, one of them, I was very close to the one in Canada, York University to be precise, and it was going well until one day I'd been praying to God while whilst doing those applications and talking to those professors where to really go and do my PhD. And on one of those days, my dad just got a call from a friend. That friend used to live in South Korea, but he had moved to New Zealand, but we didn't know. He hadn't notified my dad. My dad had brought him from South Korea to come and preach in our church in Singapore at the time. So we'd seen him face to face. We knew him. But he called my dad with a +64 number. He had his own church. He had his own church, which is still existing in New Zealand today. They call it King's Mercy Global Church, Pastor Prince. Mm-hmm. So.
Now I'm talking of your dad's church.
Oh, RCCG. Okay. But at the time in Singapore, dad was with a church called Cornerstone Community Church.
Okay.
Yes, it was pastoring the African service of that church.
Okay.
So they had different services, the Indonesian service, the Burmese service, and so on. So dad was the one pastoring the African service. So dad had brought him to come and speak. So he called that day with a +64 number. We missed the call because I think we were in church. So dad said, go and research, you know, which country has +64 code. So I went on Google and said, New Zealand. Daddy was like, what? I don't know anybody. I don't have any business in New Zealand. And I don't know anyone who could call me from that country. Anyway, funny enough, that night he slept and he said he had a dream. So he called me the next day to tell me this dream. He said he saw that he arrived at a country and he got to like their immigration. You know, he had arrived from the plane. He got to the immigration and he saw that he was being celebrated.
And later I realized the reason why we've been celebrated was because I and the lady I was dating then, or in courtship with, who is now my wife, he saw the two of us carrying a son, a young boy who was our son. And he saw that he was being celebrated because we were being celebrated. Mm. So, and he felt in his spirit that that dream was saying that that's home in the future for us. So when he woke up to tell me the dream, and he said, apply, change all your applications and start applying towards that direction, New Zealand. So I started to pray about it myself, and God gave me a word about New Zealand. But you know, for the sake of in the logic, I applied to Australia as well. So I started to now speak to potential supervisors in both countries. I got admission in both countries. Wow. But eventually, because we had heard God speak about New Zealand, we decided on New Zealand. And that was how I got to New Zealand in 2008 December. Wow. Making it 17 years. It'll be 17 years this December. That I got to New Zealand. And it started with the whole PhD thing. And since finishing PhD, married the lady in the dream. We are
married in the dream?
No, the lady in the dream.
You know, I like that.
Married in the dream. You know, two sons after, here we are to the glory of God. New Zealand is
wow.
The man is on.
Wow. So do you lecture in New Zealand?
Yes, sir. Right now, I'm a senior lecturer with the Open Polytechnic of New Zealand.
Okay.
What do you teach? IT courses, the things that range from systems analysis and design to software development, programming, and so on and so forth.
So you're a programmer?
Well, I used to be. Now I teach it. All things IT, majorly. I'm a technological enthusiast.
Wow. Wow. So, how did you both meet? It's the way it is your relationship.
Do you
go for it.
Oh, okay. 2017. So this is my own side of you. God spoke to me.
By the way, there's a lady in their midst. She's not here.
She is.
See, you know, I would love to also know how she goes into this equation. Okay.
Yeah. 2017, God spoke to me to start making videos. So I just discovered God's purpose for my life. 2016 December, I got in clarity, full clarity, what my purpose was, which is to help other people discover their purpose and maximize their potential. That was what I got clarity of as my purpose. And in 2017, a month after, you know, I got the direction and the lead to record videos every single week. That would be about helping people discover their purpose, motivating them towards purpose, clarifying what purpose really meant, and so on and so forth. So I'd just begun developing mastery of what my purpose was at the time, that topic purpose. And I was just sharing all I was learning and all I knew online. And I was doing that for, every week for a whole year. Apparently he's been watching the videos.
Wow.
And I'm not sure if he would leave a like or anything, because I don't normally see his like
nothing.
And I don't normally see his comments.
Secret and online secret followers.
And I understand people, you know, I just drop a lesson here for anybody listening to this or watching this. Sometimes you're doing something passionately and energetically, and it does not appear that anyone is watching. You're not getting a lot of views. You're not getting a lot of likes or comments. It's easy to look at those and go, maybe I'm doing the wrong thing. Maybe I'm not supposed to be doing this, and just quit and give up. But I didn't quit. I didn't give up. Because a year after, like a whole year after, January 2018 was the first time he sent me a message on Facebook, and he said, "Man of God, I've been watching your videos." I was like, "What? What?" You know? And he said, "We just started a church in Sydney. They just started their church then. And it's just been about 2 weeks you started."
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, "I've been watching your videos. I would like to come speak to us." You know? And he flew me to Australia. And that was how I
said, "Redeemed Church."
Yes. Yes. And that was how I spoke in their church for the first time. They had only just started. I think that service, they were just like less than 10, 15
or maybe
people.
20,
maybe 20, 20 people. Yeah. And it was really amazing. We had a good time. But then, because I stayed in his house, I remember he offered to put me in a hotel. I said, "No, I don't mind. I would love, I think you asked if I prefer a hotel or your house." I said, "No, no, no. I love connecting with people, connect with family." So it was good that I actually said that. You know, and that's a lesson for any young person, you know, who's starting out. Sometimes it's good that you're not just driven by luxury and all of that. You just want to connect with people authentically and genuinely. And I think because I chose that option, I was able to stay in his house, met with his family, connected with them. And that was where we realized we had some mutual things to learn from each other. So they had just started a church and they were in need of a lot of things with videos, graphics, and all of those, and all those things I could do. I developed those skills, you know, in the past. And whenever he asked, I was able to show him a few things. I remember, you know, teaching you how to design flyers on
Premiere Pro, Photoshop. We did a flyer together that weekend.
That same weekend.
That's a weekend. We did a flyer together.
You know, so that just oiled the relationship. Cause I often believe that the most sustainable of relationships is when you find a mutual, need. You know, someone has a need, you're able to meet that need. Yeah. The other person has a need and you're all just working in tandem together. So ever since then, to the glory of God, we've just been growing and growing and growing and doing things together. And our families have bonded, so well.
Yeah.
Across the Tasman.
Is there a version to?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, we were just, I just liked him. I like the style. I like this consistency. He's a man of integrity and a man of his word. And I think he just allowed, you know, I just like that. And I realized that every time we had conversations, we would talk for hours. Wow. We would talk and they are very wholesome. Like, you know, like when you talk and, you know, majority of the times we're on the same page. Mm. And even when we're on the same page, we build up stuff. Like we build up each other. And when we're on different pages, we can still respect each other and still express our views in a very good way. So I found a lot of value in that relationship. So I think there was a time I did an audit. Every year I do an audit of all my phone calls. I look at my accounts and I look at the top phone numbers. And there was a particular year that I looked at it and it was top three actually, my wife and then someone else and him. I looked at the number of hours for the year that we had spent talking on the phone. I was like, wow, this is incredible. Wow. So when we had the opportunity to travel around and, you know, create our own platform and talk about leadership and all that, you know, there was no other person that I could say, And as I said earlier on, he was my first coach. When I started, you know, doing this, I felt, okay, I needed somebody. So he did my first, we talked about the logo, talked about colors, talked about
personal branding,
and all that. So it was really good.
Why is the subject of leadership important to you guys? That you're practically traveling. You're not even doing this in Sydney or in New Zealand. You're
everywhere.
Canada, you're having Houston, you're having different. Mm-hmm. Why is it that important to you?
Well, I feel that, I know that, of course, for me, it's a mandate that I received from God. You know, initially when I set out, and as I said, I was sharing with you that during COVID, I just felt that unease in my spirit that it was time for me to do something else apart from being a clinician and apart from my pastoral work. Mm. I felt that it was time for me to start doing that. And I got a mandate to go out there and help build leaders. And I will not just react to change, but will create your own desired change.
Oh, wow.
And initially, I started with the message of change. Change makers. Mm-hmm. What I did not realize was that once I started talking and doing videos and being invited to different platforms and people, you know, heard my story, people were very interested. A lot of people were interested in the message of change, but they were not interested in leadership.
Mm.
All right, and I was then attracted to people who were not willing to grow their leadership, but they just want to change their own status quo and, you know, that kind of thing. So it became clear to me with time that, you know, I have a mandate for leaders to raise leaders who will not just, as I said, react to change, but create their own desired change without losing their identity, their individuality, or their purpose.
Uh-huh.
So that means that you can stay true to your values and to yourself, and you can create the change you want without waiting for the big break.
Uh-huh.
You can be proactive in that space. So I think that's what led me there. And with time, it became clear to me that my background in neuroscience was very helpful.
Connected.
You know, one day I saw a course advertised to MIT on the neuroscience of leadership and business.
Yeah.
Very expensive course. I registered for the course. And I was so surprised. I didn't realize the application of neuroscience into leadership. It changed everything for me. So that led me in the last 5 years into that.
Tom Kuro's neuroscience of leadership. Okay, how does that work?
Yes, so it's a field called neuroleadership. It's the application of our understanding of how the brain works mm-hmm. into improving our leadership. And that has led me to create my own unique approach, which I call NeuroLead. LEAD is mm-hmm. an acronym. So L is learning to lead. E is expressing emotions. That talks about emotional intelligence. Then A is adapting to change. That's about neuroplasticity, which is the ability of the brain to adapt and to mm-hmm. change itself. And D is developing high-performance habits. So in summary, neuroscience can, our understanding of neuroscience can help improve our leadership if we understand how the brain works. Mm-hmm. So for example, why do people resist change? Why is it hard for you as a leader to bring change into your organization and get people to change? Mm-hmm. Because our brains are wired to love similarity, stability, and security. Mm-hmm. Anything that is unfamiliar with the brain will create mm-hmm. threat in the brain. Wow. Which is not novel in its sense, although my approach is novel mm-hmm. because I'm not one of those motivational speakers or, you know, that kind of thing. I've got a real background, mm-hmm. a deep background in neuroscience. So trying to explain to people why people resist change and how we can, you know, get them across the line, how we can rewire our brains. And my main interest is in peak performance and leadership, mm-hmm. which how can you apply the knowledge of neuroscience to improve your own personal performance and productivity? Mm-hmm. How do you generate habits? How do you develop insights and problem solve? And how can you again maintain a consistent state of flow where you can deliver results consistently without burnout? Mm-hmm. So those are the kind of, you know, I'll be talking very soon on, you know, in a colloquium on the neuroscience of ruthless execution. All right. So how?
That's a good one.
Yeah. Yes. So
that's a good one.
So it's basically the science of getting things done, getting it done consistently, efficiently, and with good results.
Well, from your own viewpoints, I mean, and you are not a neuroscientist.
No, I'm not.
Well, it's a published preacher.
Well, I mean, you are close to him, so you probably will be able to also notice how do people solve. Some people are low idea and high execution. Some people are high execution and low creativity, right? So how do you solve that problem so that you are high creativity, high execution, mm-hmm. brutal execution?
Research has shown that there are people like that, people who are very good with starting things, but never good with executing. Mm-hmm. And there are people who don't start things. Mm-hmm. They don't get ideas. They don't, mm-hmm. They don't, you know, generate insights with ideas, but there are people who can take anything from anybody and they will get it done. The best way, and according to research, the way that's worked is to always team up. Always team up with someone else. Yes, always. Yeah. That's the power of a team. Yeah. Usually when people come to me and say, oh, they have an idea and they don't know how to start, I'm like, okay, maybe you need a mentor. Yeah. Maybe you need someone else who can help you get started.
Yeah.
And sometimes you notice, sometimes when somebody just helps you with the framework to get started, all of a sudden you're on.
Yeah.
But before someone comes, like when people come to my coaching now, and we just sit down for like 30 minutes and I'm able to say, papa, 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 here are 5 things you can do to get started. All of a sudden, it gets clear. Yeah. But until you maybe have those people in your life or pay for such coaching or pay to be in the same room with people like that, you just realize that your strength remains your strength and your weakness remains your weakness and you're not able to get anything done.
Yeah.
So if you are that sort of a person, team up, find somebody else who can. For instance, for myself, I'm a good starter. I like to start things. But when it comes to executing at a scale, I find it very hard. So what I've done is I've surrounded myself with people who are great at that. And usually these days, whenever I get visions and ideas and insights, the first thing I'm doing is I'm sending a voice note to my team. Hi, team. I just got this. We're doing this. And everything I got, I'll point out. And the next time we meet to talk again, it gets expanded. And guess what? They go execute. And once they're done, I do the deliverables or whatever. If I'm teaching, I teach. If I'm, you know, coaching, I coach. And he's been working like that for many years. However, when I was on my own, it was a bit hard to always
you know, drive such execution, it was always tough. But when I surrounded myself with people who are, and they are great at it. This is what they enjoy doing. Either because maybe I pay them to do it because I know that they're good at it. Like someone said, they said, one of the best things he's done is to hire the best people to do what they enjoy doing. To hire the best people to do what they enjoy to do.
I love that.
You know, and that just fixes the problem of him having to do the things that he does not enjoy doing that he still has to get done. So, just Timo.
I mean, in where you live, people invest in coaching, people invest in knowledge. Where we all come from, you see people even say, with all the blessing of God in your life, why is Dr. Sam? And he says he's a pastor, charging for coaching. He could just teach us. You see, this is the problem with we Africans. We can't help each other. I get what you now also have church people.
Yeah.
You see, people feel because you attend this in church, then you should just teach them for free. And the reality, of course, we both know is that people pay attention when they pay. When you pay, you pay attention. Yes. But how do you think and why should people invest in coaching and take the subject of mentorship and coaching seriously?
I feel very strongly, and thanks for asking that question because I believe it will help a lot of people. I feel very strongly that one of the most dangerous words in life is the word free. Mm. It's dangerous. Very
dangerous. Why is it dangerous?
It's dangerous.
This is not true.
Nothing is free. Yeah. Nothing.
There's nothing.
Even salvation, yeah, that we say it's free.
So it's technically a lie.
Somebody paid for it. And oftentimes somebody had to pay the ultimate price for what you're getting for free. Yeah. So the reason why it's dangerous is because
at no cost.
At no cost. Words. Yes. Maybe at no
so
cost. To you.
From at no cost.
To you.
Yes.
Yes. And the reason why it's dangerous is because it puts you, into that trap to believe because it is free, I can treat it anyhow. Because it is free, you know, if I like, I use it. If I like, I don't use it. Mm-hmm. And that's like casting pearls to dogs,
yeah,
or to pigs. Mm. And Jesus warned us expressly against that.
Yeah.
You would notice even Jesus was very intentional about the way he gave premium value.
Yeah.
The Bible recorded Matthew chapter 13, 14, 15, 16.
Yeah.
Many times he would explain stuff in parables, like deep principles in parables. And it is only it is only those who have paid the price of discipleship, which is literally a big price in that age to leave their father and their mother, to leave everything, to follow, who would be able to go back and say, excuse me, sir, Jesus, Rabbi, what did you mean? And you see time and time again, that parable, can you re-explain this again? There was a time Jesus re-explained a parable twice. I think it's Matthew chapter 13 like that. He did it twice. And he had to explain again and again. Mm. It only takes those people who have paid the price to be able to go back. There was never a time anybody in the crowd asked Jesus to explain anything.
Mm.
But guess what? They all listen to him and they will go home. And that's why you will never see the crowd change. You will not see change in the crowd.
Yeah.
The people that are really changing, who became the legacy of Jesus, the legacy of his teaching, are those who followed him critically and paid the price to hear what he had to say. Because when you pay the price, like you said, you pay attention. In fact, somebody said, Reverend Sam Adeyemi, Dr. Sam Adeyemi, he said this and I will never forget. He said, there's a difference between when people listen as a crowd and when people listen as a disciple or as a mentee. Mm. Crowds listen to be entertained. Mm. Disciples listen beyond what is being said. So if you're a genuine mentee or you've paid the price, you listen beyond. And that's why people like that ask questions. But when you listen and it's free, you don't ask, it's free. But when you pay the price, you ask, you want to know, you go deeper. In fact, to the point that he said that after a while, you followed somebody and you listen to them over and over. They're telling you the same thing over and over. He said there will come a time you are no longer listening to what they are saying. You are listening to why they are saying what they are saying.
Yeah.
He said that's the point you are now a disciple.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Dr. Nii could share the story of the unripe banana 75 times and you've heard it time and time again. But the next time he shares it, it's not the story that you are interested in now. It is why he's sharing that story now. That is now the lesson. And that's the heart of a disciple. That's the heart of the person that has paid the price. And if you don't pay the price, you should not get the price.
You don't pay the price.
You should not.
You should not get the price. It's be unfair to give you the price. If you don't pay the price, you should not get the price. Okay, I like that.
Thank you, sir.
I like that. I mean, for you, thank God you're also a pastor. How does the body of Christ, you know, solve that problem, you know, because while having dinner, we were having a similar conversation about people. How do you balance the place of people needing to pay versus also not being ridiculously overcharging? Mm-hmm. But the body of Christ is almost like everything has to be free, you know, salvation is free. Why, pastors?
Freely have you received, freely
dearly you receive, freely you should give. And if you're not careful, we're not really raising real disciples. Because just like he said, real disciples have paid the price, you know. And if it doesn't cost you something, you don't even value it. Mm-hmm. So how do we begin to help the people in the body of Christ to understand that importance? I mean, and that's what leadership is. Leadership is moving people from here to here. And sometimes mental.
Absolutely.
Neurology and all of that. So how do we sell that? There's a book I love, Biology, B-U-Y-O-L. Mm-hmm. It's about marketing. Great book. Mm-hmm. But how, you know, just from that book, how do we sell to the concept of investing, paying the price?
Well, I reckon the initial conversation was about, you know, how to, you know, what is the validity or the what's the importance of investing in one's own self, with especially when it comes to coaching. A lot of people who don't, you know, believe in that. Of course, that Dr. Samuel had to establish that, examples from the Bible in terms of investment. I firmly agree with that only those that are willing to invest in themselves, you know, there are three levels of influence. I used to say the first level is to impress. The second is to induce. The third is to actually inspire. And you see that in the life of Jesus as well, that Jesus impressed the Pharisees and the Sadducees, but they didn't follow him. Jesus could not hand over the future into their hands. Jesus induced a lot of the people. 5,000 people were fed. All right. Thousands of people saw miracles. But yet in John chapter 16 or so, when he preached a very hard message, all of them left him. So they were induced. So there are a lot of people who follow us because of our inducement. Some people follow us because of our gift. They're impressed with our success, their gift. But we cannot build our legacy on them. We cannot build our platform on them. We cannot rely on them. We cannot hand over the future to them.
People.
And Jesus did not trust the Pharisees, the Sadducees, all the people crying in his name. He didn't. But there was a core, all right, that he inspired. And if you look at that word inspiring in Latin, actually means to breathe, inspiration, breathe. Jesus breathed on them, invested in them, invest in Latin. It's actually from the word investiture, to put invest
on somebody.
So when you invest in somebody, you're taking your coat and you're putting it on that person. It takes a lot. So Jesus invested in them 3.5 years and then he could trust them to take on from there. So I guess that the same thing can be applied when it comes to personal development. All right, that we've got to look at how we can develop ourselves, not just when it comes to our Christian faith, which comes at no cost to us, all right, because Jesus has paid the price. All right, and of course that cannot be monetized. We give freely, we give as we are led, and we give cheerfully, and those biblical principles will not be changed. All right, but when it comes to our development, certainly I see that there is this same culture of wanting to just only pursue something that will cost you something, which is not correct. I was sharing with you that when I decided to
start my new expression in leadership development. I needed a personal brand. I needed everything. Even though Dr. Sam was my friend, I said, no, I want you to take me seriously because I know that if I do not pay for it, all right, we will spend half of the time talking about politics. So he knows that the time is precious. It's paid time. Then I can hold him accountable.
Yeah.
He took an, if you see our meetings, they were serious meetings. Yeah. He was like, you will hold me accountable. We were having serious discussions. He didn't charge me anything crazy. Mm-hmm. All right. And he gave me a very good rate, but I made sure that I paid him in that sense to make it serious enough. All right. For what both I had in mind.
Yeah.
And over the years, I've had different coaches. When I wanted to expand my business, I had a business coach. All right. Because I just, you know, wanted to expand my network. I wanted to understand the game. I wanted to understand how to, you know, reach out to people, how to expand my business and all that. And so people pay. There are members of my church who are my patients. They come to my clinic, they pay. All right. So, you know, they don't say, oh, you know, I'm going to
my pastor.
Yeah, they don't say my health care, you know, freely or, you know. At the end of the day, I'm running. Of course, I
really, said it.
Good enough. Well, speaking, well, somebody pays for it. Somebody will pay for it. Of course, you know, sometimes I, you know, give them discounts or even waive the fees and all that. But they don't even, will not even find me to discuss the fees because you, before you get to me, you would have spoken to a couple of other people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't discuss fees with people, that kind of thing, the way we're structured. So people are always, would always, you know, when they see value in something. And I think this conversation should just, you know, it's just highlighting the need for us to grow, develop ourselves, invest in ourselves. All right. And see how we can. I'll share with you that when I found that, oh, I could apply neuroscience to business. And I found that, you know, I paid thousands of dollars to go to Leopard MIT was an online program. All right. And I was the materials I had, where will I get those materials from? All right. Having those materials and understanding and reading and digesting them, I realized that, oh, yeah. So, and I think so, I'll just put it that way, that it's important for us to be able to separate, you know, the gospel from, other, and God wants us to prosper in these other areas. Yeah. All right. We're not going to teach, you know, entrepreneurship in all its details or even leadership in all of its finest details, you know, without, going through special programs, and those programs cost money.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you get to practice medicine, then choose to own your own hospital or your own clinic? If I'm, what kind of mindset is required? Because here in America, for example, we have, I mean, the majority of the black doctors are Nigerians. But you don't see many of them thinking of, can I own a clinic? And is it because you're in Australia and it's easier there? What mindset you get a medical doctor? Because owning a clinic is different from practicing medicine.
Absolutely.
That's the business of medicine.
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you get to know more about the business of medicine? How do you wire yourself into now thinking entrepreneurship? Mm. And that's really what most of us who are professional need to aspire to.
Because
that's really where the financial freedom
comes in. Yeah. So when I became board certified, I signed my first contract, very great contract. I think gave me a lot of money. They signed me up for a lot of money.
Wow.
That's even as a sign up. So I had a sign up fee.
Mm-hmm.
They were so desperate for me. I had a sign up fee and then I was earning a lot of money. I was doing very well. 5-year contract. I spent 5 years in this private practice and I was doing my PhD at the time. So when I finished the PhD and I finished with, you know, my contract was running to coming to an end, the owner of the practice, the practice was owned by a corporate entity. It was a corporate. They sold it to another entity for a lot of money.
Wow.
When I heard how much they sold the business, that was for the first time that I realized was that, oh, medical records cost a lot. They are worth a lot. Every interaction that you have and a medical record is generated is money, is worth more than a consultation. Let me say this again. A patient sees a doctor. The cost, the value of the paperwork and the records generated is worth more than the amount the patient paid to see the doctor.
Wow.
Those historical records. So,
And of course, I'd spent 5 years there. Over the 5 years, I'd brought in a lot of patients too, and you know, that kind of thing. I contributed to the business. So that was the first time that my eyes really switched open to the idea that, man, this is a business, and that I could be here comfortable on a salary for the rest of my life. The last time, that year was 2015, and 2015 was the last time I earned a salary. I've never seen a pay slip since 2015.
Wow.
So I decided then that I'm going to start my own business. I'm going to start my practice. And I suffered. It coincided with the start of the church, actually. Around that time. Yes. No, so 2015 was the last time I got a pay slip from, you know, church. From a salary job.
Yeah.
But then I was working in that practice until 2018. So I think it was 2018 I really
contracting.
I was contracting actually, and then I started our practice, and it was difficult because I remember one of the, and I shared this with you, a day I went to work and I had only 3 patients booked and no one showed up. No one showed up. So I was like, you know. So I had to now learn. I didn't know that they're medical marketing experts. It's a business. I didn't know about data brokers.
Wow.
I didn't know that, okay, if I want to send a fax message, an email to 600 doctors in this particular precinct or province or suburb,
Someone will do that.
Wow. Somebody has the details of all the engineers in every local council or stuff like that. So I got to know a lot and explore about that and invest a lot in marketing for a whole year. I had to understand who my clients were and who my referrers are and who my customers are. They're all different. And in Australia, we're not allowed to advertise. The doctors don't advertise. So you can't go on TV. And as a specialist, my service is referral based. So a patient cannot walk into my office. You have to be referred by your primary care physician or family doctor. So for 1 year, I was, you know, reaching out to doctors, family physicians. Yeah. I would organize programs for them, launches for them. I would, So I had to understand. And that business cost money. It cost money to, I was provide lunch. And they go to a practice that has 20 or 30 GPs. And I'll provide them lunch. And I'll be with them. And I'll give them some very crash course, 20-minute crash course. They'll get my full mobile numbers. When they have difficult cases, they'll call me. And then, of course, they refer
patients.
And within a year of doing that, boom, our practice sort of blew up. People, you know, got to see me. And then I would give lectures and at no cost. But, of course, I'm getting them to see me. I'm getting them to see me and to, you know, refer patients to me. And so we just build that now. And that's why I can be here. And our practice is still running.
Yeah.
All right, because we've got other staff there now where we can do that. And now I can also pursue my other signals for versions. So it's important. And I see that a lot of people, particularly those of us in the professional class, are not entrepreneurial.
Yes.
And we are, when I came for this leadership colloquium 2 years ago, I know how much I lost in revenue for 2-3 weeks while I was going around, you know, speaking.
Yeah.
All right. And then, you know, I shared with you that last year, wow. It was refreshing to be here and still see that, you know, business is, you know, growing. But I think that, I say this, that the way to build transnational wealth is not through salary.
Uh-huh.
You're not going to build true wealth without entrepreneurship. Uh-huh. So we have to find ways, particularly for not, of course, entrepreneurship and all that is not for everyone.
Yes, not everybody can
do it. But for those I think we need more of it, and particularly within our community, because I realized that if we're going to build not individual wealth, like you can do so well in a business like Houston here's oil and gas. A lot of people who are doing a lot of oil and gas stuff, like VPs and all that, will earn a lot more. They don't need to sort of do that. But if we're going to have middle mass, we have to have more people doing business.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then, you know, I went to the local chamber of commerce. I live in the Liverpool area, not the UK. UK's Liverpool, in Australia's Liverpool. And I joined the Liverpool Chamber of Commerce one day, and I just went there, and I saw, you know,
the number of businesses that are there, and big businesses are like, where are our black businesses? Mm. Most of us just prefer to get a salary, work in a wear suit to work, and do fine. But you know, there's this other aspect of a professional life that is important here. Yeah.
Powerful. For somebody watching this and is thinking, I need to Japan, maybe to New Zealand. Or to Singapore, what is your advice to them?
I'm a firm believer in not just Japan because everybody else is Japan, or because you're actually, in quote, suffering wherever it is that you are. Because for a believer, that might be dangerous. Mm. I'm a firm believer in the fact that you want to make sure that God wants you to live where you are, because no matter how tough and things are where you are, you may be shocked that that could still be your land to prosper. We've seen that time and time again in the scriptures. I've seen people who've gone to greener pastures supposedly, and that place was not green for them. So my core advice is make sure that God wants you out. That's number one. Be very sure. Number two, where does God want you next? Because I feel very strongly, since we appear to be speaking to faith-based people, I believe traveling abroad is very much a mission than it is a quest for survival. Mm. When you treat traveling abroad or Jaffa as a quest for survival, you will miss your purpose in life. Mm. Because very much so, God has done it in such a way that oftentimes when he sends people to a particular country, he's trying to do something peculiar in that country through that person.
Yeah.
So when you're not sent, you've sent yourself. And when you've sent yourself, it means you are responsible for yourself. You're responsible for your own protection. You're responsible. And all of those things can cost you very dearly. So my advice is make sure you're sent. And when you're sent, everything sorts itself out. Because you know critically that you're backed. You're backed in terms of protection. You're backed in terms of what you go there to do. In fact, On the context of leadership, I believe very strongly that purpose is leadership. Leadership is purpose, and that's a completely different podcast.
Purpose is leadership.
Yes.
Leadership is purpose.
Because every problem was born out of someone vacating their place of leadership.
Wow.
Every problem is a leadership problem.
Wow.
Every problem. Mm. And purpose is the solution to every leadership problem. Knowing that you're called to fix a thing, to change, to cause change in an area, that's where leadership truly begins.
Most people don't rise up to leadership because they haven't found
purpose. Yeah, or they found purpose, but they are distracted in somewhere else. They know this is where I'm not supposed to be, but they are being distracted. They are making more money somewhere. You know, they are trying to attract fame or influence somewhere else, but they abandon their post.
Yeah.
So that's why every problem is a leadership problem, is a purpose problem. Yeah. So if you know what you're called to do and you assume your sphere of influence, or you assume that place, and you're able to fulfill purpose. And I often believe that that's oftentimes in tandem also with location. So the Bible talks about in Isaiah chapter 16, talks about arise and shine, for a light has come and the glory of the Lord is in the morning. You say darkness covers the earth, gross darkness covers the people. Darkness is covering people mostly where people are not shining as light. Mm. So whenever you see people who are not rising up to shine, darkness will cover that place. It tells you of a void in that area. So there are many locations in the world where many believers or children of God who God has called to actually be there are not. Either not there or they are distracted. Mm-hmm. They know that they're supposed to be there, but they're not there. Or they don't know they're supposed to be there, so they're not there.
Mm.
So if all of us are intentional about our life's purpose, our calling, then we can gradually begin to shine as light and reduce the darkness in our world.
Wow, that's powerful. That's powerful. I can go on for another hour with you.
Thank you.
You know, and we've already done 1 hour, so we have to start up, you know. What is your most profound leadership lessons that you want to share with us? Let's pick one, because I know you probably have a lot.
Well, leadership, mine is very simple. Leadership is influence.
Leadership is influence.
And it's something that we can agree on, that leadership is, and everyone has the capacity to lead.
Mm.
everyone has the capacity to lead, and everyone is leading in one way or the other. Mm. And so I think, as Dr. Sam said, if we know that our purpose is tied to our leadership, then we will rise up and fill that role, mm-hmm. whether it's in our family, whether it's in our businesses, wherever we are, we'll be able to rise up and create change, influence people, and do it in a way that would not compromise our values. All right. A lot of people create change. A lot of people influence and, others, but they do it, away from their true call.
Mm.
They're either not true to themselves, or they lose their values, or they compromise their stand, or they are not authentic.
Because very much so, God has done it in such a way that oftentimes when he sends people to a particular country, he's trying to do something peculiar in that country through that person. So when you're not sent, you've sent yourself. And when you've sent yourself, it means you are responsible for yourself. You're responsible for your own protection, share responsible, and all of those things can cost you very dearly. So my advice is make sure you are sent. When you're sent, everything sorts itself out because you know critically that you're backed. You're backed in terms of protection. You're backed in terms of what you go there to do. In fact, on the context of leadership, I believe very strongly that purpose is leadership. Leadership is purpose.
Mm.
And that's a completely different podcast.
Purpose is leadership.
Yeah.
Leadership is
purpose. Because every problem was born out of someone vacating their place of leadership.
Wow.
Every problem is a leadership problem.
Wow.
Every problem. And purpose is the solution to every leadership problem. Knowing that you're called to fix a thing, to change, to cause change in an area, that's where leadership truly begins.
Most people don't rise up to leadership because they haven't found
their purpose.
Yeah, or they found purpose, but they are distracted somewhere else. They know this is where I'm supposed to be, but they have been distracted. They are making more money somewhere, they are trying to attract fame or influence somewhere else, but they abandon their post.
Yeah.
So that's why every problem is a leadership problem, is a purpose problem.
Mm.
So if you know what you're called to do and you assume your sphere of influence or you assume that place, you're able to fulfill purpose. And I often believe that that's oftentimes in tandem also with location.
Mm.
So the Bible talks about in Isaiah chapter 16, talks about arise and shine, for a light has come, and a glory of the rising up. And he said, darkness covers the air, gross darkness covers the people. Darkness is covering people mostly where people are not shining as light.
Mm.
So whenever you see people who are not rising up to shine, darkness will cover that place. It tells you of a void in that area. So there are many locations in the world where many believers or children of God who God has called to actually be there are not. Either not there or they are distracted.
Mm-hmm.
They know that they're supposed to be there, but they're not there. Or they don't know they're supposed to be there, so they're not there.
Mm.
So if all of us are intentional about our life's purpose, our calling, then we can gradually begin to shine as light and reduce the darkness in our world.
Wow, that's powerful. That's powerful. I mean, I can go on for another hour with you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us, man. But already done 1 hour, so we have to start up,
No.
What is your most profound leadership lessons that you want to share with us? Let's pick one, because I know you probably have a lot.
Well, leadership, mine is very simple. Leadership is influence.
Leadership is influence.
And it's something that we can agree on, that leadership is, and everyone has the capacity to lead.
Mm.
Everyone has the capacity to lead, and everyone is leading in one way or the other. Mm. And so I think, as Dr. Sam said, if we know that our purpose is tied to our leadership, then we will rise up and fill that role, whether it's in our family, whether it's in our businesses, wherever we are, we'll be able to rise up and create change, influence people, and do it in a way that will not compromise our values. All right. A lot of people create change. A lot of people influence and, others, but they do it you know, away from their true core. They're either not true to themselves, or they lose their values, or they compromise their stand, or they're not authentic. We're talking about authenticity. Or they're not authentic. They're not their true self. All right. And I think that there's nothing more, disappointing than for you to, you know, propose yourself to be a leader without being genuine or authentic. So leadership is influence. Everyone has the capacity to lead, and we need to do it from our core.
Wow, powerful. How about you?
This one I could go on and on, but I will try and keep it short. I think personally, my biggest burden is to help people understand purpose. And that, I believe, is the key to leadership.
Leadership is purpose.
Because there is a true misconception about what purpose is. So many people believe purpose is whatever your hand finds to do. Do it with all thy might. But your hand can find what you're not supposed to be doing. And then you're doing it with all your might. And that's why we see time and time again, people supposedly successful at a thing, but yet they are empty on the inside. So what is purpose? Purpose is not what you do well. Purpose is not what you do, really. Purpose is the reason behind what you do, or the reason behind what you are called to do. So many times we are excited about what we are called to do.
Purpose
is the reason
behind what you do.
Yeah, and it's the original reason, the creator's reason.
Yeah.
The reason that resides in the mind of your creator, not the one you make up. So we can make up whys for different things. There's a why you do this podcast now, which could be your personal why. But there could also be the why God wanted you to do this podcast. That God's reason supersedes yours. If yours is not in alignment with the one, the reason why he's made you to do it, soon enough, you quit this podcast, you burn out. You start to ask us, why am I even doing this nonsense? You know, because you've carved out your own personal why.
We say burnout is a function of lack of purpose.
Many times, sir. And then, of course, sometimes burnout could also be a function of not doing the purpose right.
Yeah.
So
mismanaging the purpose.
Yes. Executing purpose with the wrong strategy. Management. Yes. That's also another different purpose.
Purpose manager. Yeah. Purpose manager. Yeah.
I like that.
With the moment you repeated it the second time, I felt something in my spirit. My baby leaped. Purpose management. That's fine. That is fine.
Yes, I don't mind. Because I'm already seeing many layers here.
The moment you repeated it the fourth time, my baby leaped as well. If there's any, that's why I call it my greatest burden, to help my world understand the true meaning of purpose. Just the meaning. Because you can't discover what you have not uncovered. If you don't know what something is, you can't discover the real deal. You know, like you can be seeking gold and you just think it's what's shiny, and then you dig and dig and be looking for something shiny and you never find something shiny. But you'll be missing out on the gold. So purpose is really what exists in the mind of the creator of a thing. And the reason why our world misses purpose is because we see results, but we lack the depth.
Oh, I love
that. We crave results. We crave the result of others. Yes. So I look at Dr. Steven and he's doing this podcast.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I feel like, oh, I'm inspired to start my own podcast. But I've never asked Dr. Steven why.
Yeah.
So the question of why is a very tough question to answer. The question of what is very easy to answer. And the question of why is a question of purpose. I can, okay, what is this podcast? This podcast is a leadership podcast, but why? To know why, I need to sit with you.
Yeah.
We'll probably spend hours. Then you take me through the story of why and all of that. And that's what many people don't want to do. They don't want to do that with their creator. They don't want to sit down with their creator. They don't want to have any relationship with their creator. So what they do, they find the shortcut. They make up their own why. And they keep running. But that leads to burnout. Because you run aimlessly. Wow. There will come a time you start questioning why you're running.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if there's any leadership lesson I could teach my world, is that purpose is leadership, but we must get purpose right.
Let me just sprinkle some salt there, some neuroscience salt on that. All right. So whenever you've answered that question of why and you find your purpose, all right, it activates certain areas, the reward centers of your brain, which we call anticipatory reward.
Mm.
All right. It's the same reward you get from knowing that you're going to have a can of Coke on a hot sunny day.
Oof, I like that.
You know that even before you drink the can of Coke,
you're already
it's the feeling that your child has when you say, I'm taking you to KFC.
Yeah. And you have not taken
them. You have not taken them there.
It's already,
they are already flooded. Now you give them an excuse of not going to pay. See the disappointment that they have. You flood them with dopamine.
Yeah.
And then you crash and the child will cry and will be disappointed. It will be painful. Mm. All right. You know, so because you flooded and you've given them that anticipation. So that same thing that happens to the brain when you find your purpose. Even before you start living in the reality of that purpose, there's an anticipatory demand there. And one of the things about dopamine is that while we're talking about bonus,
I love this.
There's a hormone cortisol in our brain, which is a stress hormone that gives us arousal. It's a reason for arousal. All right. So that in the morning, when we wake up in the morning, we're alert, our brains are full of cortisol. We need arousal stress. Arousal stress is what gets us going. You know, sometimes that's why we write our emails on the deadline. We do all our appointments and deadline. You're having a speech tomorrow. You're likely to not get any revelation until the day before. And you write everything. That's arousal stress. Because the deadline is imminent. You just get all the, you know, that kind of thing. And a lot of us live on that. But that leads to burnout. All right. Because arousal stress gets you started. It kind of
is not sustainable.
It's not sustainable. What will sustain the journey is the dopamine. Dopamine actually reduces stress. And how do you get the dopamine? By having a mental picture of the future. Every time you have a mental picture of the future and you remind yourself of my purpose, of my why, all right, it's actually relieving. It's actually relieving. So, and that's how, for example, marathon runners, you know, there's what they call the 30-kilometer high wall for marathon runners, which is why it's so hard. Between 20 to 30 kilometers is the time when the majority of people drop out. Because at that time, if you don't have a why, if you are running the marathon because doctors have run it, you are likely to drop.
Yeah.
But those that have a why, all right,
we just keep at it.
They are able to flood their brains. They can have a picture
of the medal.
Of the medal.
Of the finish
line.
They
push through the pain to be able to overcome. And without that, so it's all sort of connected in that sense.
Yeah.
It's hard for you to finish. It's hard for you to start if you don't know your purpose.
Yeah.
It's even harder for you to finish without kicking it.
And that reminds me of Joseph. You just be wonder why. Oh,
yes, sir.
You know, as a slave, he just saw something great happen. As a prisoner.
Yes, sir.
So this tells us that if you become sad in the process of becoming you, either you didn't see it right, you know, or the purpose isn't clear.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It reminds me of what was said about Jesus in Hebrews chapter 12. He says the author and the finisher of our faith, who for the joy, looking unto Jesus, who for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross. And I often will say that if you don't have any joy set before, you can't endure any cross.
Yeah. Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you
for having us. This is good. We should do this again.
Yes, sir. I agree. I loved it. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It has all the elements, you know, the neuro-sauce element, neuro-purpose, they all did it together. It has also the spiritual element. Thank you for this. Guys, this is the end of another beautiful episode of Leadership Podcast with me. See you next week. I love you. Bye-bye.